This episode of the podcast is brought to you by Staub Audio Engineering. If you have listened to any of the episodes, you have undoubtedly heard me talk about Mike and the phenomenal audio engineering work that he does. His mixes and masters are truly some of the best that I've ever heard. I love working with Mike on all of our Dreamfield tunes, on all of our Summit One tunes. He is an absolute wizard. Make sure to hit him up, inquire about mixing and mastering prices, and take your tracks to the next level. Oh, yeah. And Mike is also one of the nicest, kindest human beings you'll ever meet. Definitely hit him up and work with him.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to all of the producers, artists, and creators that are tuning into the show. My name is Cody Christensen, and you are listening to the Chilled Samples Podcast. Welcome to the podcast, man. I'm excited to be able to share the screen with you today and to learn more about you and your projects.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I've been actually listening to the podcast while I'm driving for a while now, so it's neat to finally be able to get on and meet you.
Yeah, well, man, I appreciate that, dude, and that's a trip for me to hear, and it's been a wild journey this whole podcast thing, but it's turned into one of the most impactful projects that I've really ever taken on, just having the opportunity to chat with so many talented artists and develop those relationships. So, thanks for listening and supporting, man. And, George, I was checking out your Spotify bio and you're currently based in Nashville. Is that correct?
Yeah. Well, I go to university in Nashville. I go to Vanderbilt. Right now I'm not in Nashville. I'm couple of states away. I'm in Virginia, where my family is. So that's where I'm staying right now. But in a couple of weeks, I'll be moving back. So I'm really happy about that.
Yeah, nice, man. So you're initially from Virginia?
I was born in Baltimore, so big sports fan there, Ravens and Orioles. But I moved when I was around like 10 or so to Virginia, mm-hmm. and now I'm going to university in Nashville.
Now, how'd you end up in, what was your, what was the biggest factor in deciding to go to Vanderbilt?
Well, I think one of the main reasons was obviously the city of Nashville was very music friendly. There's a lot of music bars and live music here. So I definitely spent a lot of time in the city just hanging out with my friends and listening to music. And also aside from that, financial aid was pretty good compared to other schools. So it worked out really nice for me.
Nice, man. Well, and so I've heard a lot of things about Nashville, and then my homie Brandon, artist named Enlove, I know he lived in Nashville for quite a few mm-hmm. years. I forget what school he went to. Is it like Belmont?
Belmont is right next to Vanderbilt actually. So
oh really? Yeah. Yeah, so I'm pretty sure he went to Belmont, but tell us about Nashville, man, because I know that it's a music city and I've never been. So for maybe somebody that lives in Europe or just somebody like an American like myself that's never been to Nashville, how would you describe it as a city?
Yeah, I mean, it's for me, I growing up mostly in Virginia, a little bit in Baltimore, of course, but in rural Virginia, it's a lot different from the city life. So it was a huge culture shock to me. The diversity is nice. The nightlife is all amazing. And of course, the live music. There's so many bars out there. You can go out and listen to live music. And so inspiring, like hearing people play live. It's mm-hmm. it's such a different experience than like listening on your headphones or in the car, because I don't know, something about the music, like the sound traveling and actually like going from the instrument to your ears, is just, I don't know. I always, whenever I listen to live music, I get inspired. And as soon as I get home, I start writing again based on what I hear. So it's definitely a really neat place to be. And
That's awesome, man. There's a few different streets where it's like bars stacked on top of each other where there's just different bands like playing out of different windows, essentially. Is that real? Am I making that up?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I haven't had that much time to go explore because I've been focused on academics, but there's definitely a lot of stuff going on there.
Nice. Well, and you mentioned rural Virginia. What part of Virginia did you grow up in?
I grew up in a town called Winchester. It's not exactly rural, but it's like around 20,000 people. It's close to the border of West Virginia and Maryland. So okay. Close to DC, but also like a little bit away.
Yeah. Nice, man. Yeah. I grew up on a farm, so I understand rural environment for sure. I grew up on a farm in Iowa. So, so I get the rural environment for sure, man. When did you first start getting into creating music?
So ever since I was about five, I've been learning piano. I took a little bit of a break when I moved because we had to find a new piano teacher. And I kind of lost a lot of progress there, but I was able to pick it up pretty quickly when I got started again. So that was nice. When I first started producing music, it was because I was inspired by electronic music, EDM. Mm-hmm. Back then, maybe in middle school, I was a really big fan of, you know, like NCS, No Copyright Sounds,
mm-hmm.
and all of their, nowadays I consider it kind of like cheesy, the like having the same synth lead and drum pattern and all that. But back then I thought that was the coolest music I've ever heard. So I downloaded FL Studio and I started trying to make some beats. And they all sounded the same. Basically, it was just a melody on like a super saw, mm-hmm. and just the same like kick pattern in the background. And from there, like, I sent my music to my friends in Discord, and one of my friends, Owen, shout out to Owen, he was like, this is actually pretty good. So I kept at it. I kept improving. And I switched genres actually a ton of times. I switched to from like progressive house to like future bass.
Mm-hmm.
And then eventually I settled into lo-fi. Just kind of, I started remixing like anime soundtracks, and that kind of was a little bit related, I guess, because, you know, the lo-fi scene was kind of born out of anime GIFs and loops, mm-hmm. and stuff like that. So, that's how I got into lo-fi. And from there, you know, the rest is history.
Nice, man. Well, and do you still play piano pretty regularly?
I mean, I still play like to compose piano music, but I haven't been taking lessons anymore, mm-hmm. for like more than 5 years. So definitely my skills have gone down, but like in terms of composition and actually creating music, it's been a huge improvement. But nowadays, like my main instrument is actually guitar, not piano. It's more portable. It's easier, mm-hmm. to take around and play with you.
Yeah, well, and the loops that you sent over for the Patreon sample pack that's coming out next month, they were gorgeous, man. So you have a really beautiful, beautiful tonality.
Yeah, I appreciate it. It's actually really nice to be able to hear that, because I know when I first got started, I'm self-taught, so I didn't have a guitar teacher. I just decided I want to play in my school's jazz band.
Mm.
And so I started just playing power chords and stuff. When I joined the jazz band, there are all these like crazy chords on the sheet music, and I got so confused. I panicked. I started trying to learn everything because I didn't know how to play anything. So it was actually a really good way to like improve really fast at guitar, because I didn't want to embarrass myself.
Yeah.
I've always been a little bit hesitant to use it in lo-fi, at least at the beginning, because I felt like not having an actual guitar teacher and just being self-taught, I always kind of had that imposter syndrome. Like, am I really like good at guitar, or am I doing something wrong? Because I don't have anyone to check me. But then when I got into the lo-fi scene, everyone's super nice. One of the first people who kind of supported me was, you know him as well, is my friend Gosun, from Sweden. And he's a touring guitarist, and he said that my guitar part sounded pretty good. So I was really encouraged by that. That was a really nice moment. And of course, like after that, I got connected with Pointy Features.
Yep.
Who also liked the guitar and Mondo. So yeah, just the support from that gave me a lot of like positivity surrounding like my actual guitar skills. So I'm really glad for the lo-fi scene and how much this helped me develop as a musician.
Wow. Well, shout out to our lo-fi community, because that's super special to hear. And I think imposter syndrome is such an interesting concept, man, because I don't think it, no matter what level you reach, I don't think it ever goes away. I think and it can vary so drastically, even hour to hour. And I experienced that being both a producer of lo-fi and electronic music, and I run, I climb mountains, I podcast, yada yada yada. I do all these things, man. And on a daily basis, I'll doubt my confidence or my skill levels in one of those at some point. But I think that's just part of the artistic journey. But like you said, having that positive encouragement from those around you, sometimes that can be everything. And that's one of the most spectacular elements of the lo-fi community that I've recognized since joining this community when I first jumped into lo-fi. And that's awesome. That's really inspiring to hear that you've gotten that encouragement from some of the most talented in our scene, man.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially like one of the main aspects that I struggled with is like mixing, mastering, like the actual technical side of music production. And it can be discouraging. I remember when I was making electronic music, I would collab with people and they'd be like, this mix is just not good or whatever. And always hearing that, it's like, it gets you so down. Cause like, there's no one who can really like sit behind you and like, teach you how to mix. You just kind of gotta like just start making songs and producing them and explore from that. But when I joined the lo-fi scene, it's been like way more supportive than electronic music. So
Yeah, man. Well, and as somebody that still produces and participates in the EDM community, it can be pretty cutthroat, and sometimes the competitiveness or the competitive nature that you see within the scene can just be exhausting. And of course, I think that there, you still feel a little competitiveness in this scene, but in comparison to any other scene that I've been a part of, this is just by far the most encouraging and helpful scene that I've ever experienced. And I think that is what makes it special. Do you still produce electronic music, or are you just strictly producing kind of lo-fi chill hop?
I'm mostly lo-fi now. Occasionally I'll kind of dabble in electronic elements, like in the songs. I'll pull up Serum and try to make a synth patch or something like that. But yeah, for now it's mostly like lo-fi and jazz hop and stuff like that.
Nice. Well, and let's rewind a little bit to you were, you said you were participating in the school's jazz band. So so tell us about your music experience, growing up. You started piano at 5, you started playing guitar, jazz band, but, let's dive into the evolution of George a little bit further.
Playing piano, it was like, I never composed anything. So it was kind of, just learning skills and improving and playing other people's music that's already been composed. But then I think having piano as your first instrument is really beneficial, because you can learn a lot of the music theory that's associated with learning other instruments. So that was a really good starting place for me. Of course, after that, when I joined the band in middle school, I actually, my first instrument, not in the jazz band, but in the regular wind ensemble, was actually tuba. So
nice.
I was such a skinny kid back then, like holding a big ass instrument. It was really funny. That was actually really helpful in terms of composition as well. Cause with tuba, the parts are usually pretty boring, to be honest, but But you get the sense of like what a baseline should feel like and how the progression should go. Cause the bass is like it drives the progression of the music. So, I combined that kind of with my piano skills and started creating like really simple melodies for EDM, with just a simple bass line and a melody line. And it just evolved from there. I kept figuring out how to add things, and different instruments, started playing different, like I picked up bass guitar as well. So, there's definitely, it's just starting from that piano and like evolving from that. That's basically how, I got into music production and yeah, that's how my progression as a musician went.
It's fantastic that you're able to experiment with those different types of instruments. And I love what you said about the piano just being the perfect baseline instrument for learning music theory. And I didn't take piano lessons until college. And up until that point, I took guitar lessons, and then I played saxophone in elementary school and in middle school and high school. And it's so funny, man, like with the saxophone, with the piano, you get to visually see the math behind music theory. You can visually see it. With the saxophone, like none of it makes sense visually. And so I really didn't start to have a grasp on music theory until college, until I started taking those piano classes. So that's awesome that you had that baseline experience. And when did you first, how old were you when you downloaded FL Studio?
If I remember correctly, it was, I think it was, I was around 12 or 13.
Nice,
but I didn't
man.
Start like producing seriously until a couple years after that.
So, mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Well, and so when you say produce seriously, what do you mean by that?
I mean like start uploading music, and mm-hmm. like getting some listeners and acquiring a little bit of a fan base, and just getting support like that, just evolving as a musician, I guess.
Yeah. Well, and having the courage to release and share your art. And you were doing that in high school.
Yeah.
Correct? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which, oh my, that's so awesome, man. It's, cause I didn't even, let's see, I was 20. Yeah. I didn't download Ableton until I was 20. And of course I had the years of saxophone experience, but, yeah, it wasn't until I was 20 that I actually downloaded Ableton. And I guess there's the con of being older when you first download a DAW, but at the same time, I think I had the dedication and the discipline at 20 that I wouldn't have had potentially when I was younger. So and that's just my story. So it's not better or worse. That's just that's just how it happened.
Yeah.
But man, so moving into college, how have you balanced academics with your musical and artistic pursuits?
Well, I think mostly when I'm focused on academics, I can only really focus on one thing at a time. So like if I'm academics focused, I'll just like try to finish my assignments and, you know, try to learn the material and catch up with my coursework. But then as soon as it hits like the weekend or I get on a break, you know, I just pull up FL Studio and just start going ham.
Yeah.
And just like go into flow state and try to get in the zone and crank out like 3 songs a day.
Yep. Yeah. What are you studying?
I'm studying computer science. So like a lot of programming and coding stuff.
Maybe. Nice, man. Yeah. Well, and those are, I guess I don't know anything about computer programming, but they almost seem like that computer programming and music production would almost be complementary art forms to be developing at the same time.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've dabbled in making VSTs and also doing a lot of the stuff I'm doing with Clover Records. I'm the developer there, trying to make some cool stuff for the lo-fi scene. Including like I showed you via DM, like Clover, we just released a new website called lofibear.io. It's basically like a lo-fi live stream, but also with a built-in study timer. So you can time your study sessions and like, just make sure you're studying. Because I know as a Gen Z kid growing up, it's like there's so many distractions out there now. Like if every time I sit down to study, like my phone buzzes every 5 minutes and I get distracted, mm-hmm. start watching like sports scores, keeping up with like DMs and stuff like that. But it's so nice having that website there to just have the timer always running. So, you know, like if I stop studying, then this timer is not authentic. It doesn't count. So yeah. I have to keep studying at least mm-hmm. until I get to the break.
Yeah.
As a record label, I'm the A&R and developer at Clover. We want to take lo-fi into a new direction because currently it's like, I think among like people in their 20s or maybe in their teens, lo-fi is pretty popular. Most people have at least heard of it. Mm-hmm. But then beyond that, it's like you ask someone who's like maybe 40 about lo-fi hip hop, they have no idea. Because right now it's kind of a niche subgenre. Mm-hmm. It's kind of internet music. So like YouTube live streams and Spotify, stuff like that. And we think there's so many people out there who haven't discovered lo-fi yet who could benefit from it.
Yeah.
Because it's not, it's moved, it's transcended being just like a music genre. At this point, it's kind of like in a whole aesthetic by itself. It's mm-hmm. one that like really values like imperfections, because you know the music always has that like old retro style, like vinyl crackle mm-hmm. type stuff. So I think the reason that's so appealing is because you can kind of find beauty in imperfections where you wouldn't usually find it. And I think that's what makes lo-fi so appealing. And we want to kind of expand from that as a label, because it's like with lo-fi, you know, even if you're having a bad day, even if you have a lot of work to do, you can kind of put on lo-fi and it's kind of the same vibe of like, my life's not perfect, but I can kind of find beauty in that, in like just routine tasks, or even in when you're having trouble. It's a whole aesthetic by itself. So we want to kind of take that aesthetic and move it beyond music, if I'm making sense at all. So that's the reason we made the website, and we're expanding to new stuff as well, in the future. So yeah, we have a lot of plans for that.
Yeah. Well, that was George. That was eloquently said, man. And even this shirt, lo-fi happiness is magic. My homie D-Rock gave me this shirt. I don't know where he got it, but I love it. Because you're so right, man. I think we're tapping into something different, something that is truly special within this modern age lo-fi hip hop era. And I get a really cool perspective from my collaborator Kelly, who's my collaborator on our project Dreamfield, and he's 67. He's a 67-year-old that comes from the classic rock world. He's been playing guitar for an entire lifetime. He produced music for TV shows back in the 80s. And so he's coming at this from such a different perspective, right? Like there's literally a 40-year age gap between us. And he senses that the magic that this lo-fi scene is bringing in. Even when he's looking at Spotify stats, like he's so encouraged by the fact that most of our listeners for Dreamfield, which a lot of our streams are coming from Lo-Fi Girl, of course. Kudos to Lo-Fi Girl for creating what they've created. But like most of the listeners are, I think 18 to 34 is the age range. And for him to look at that he finds so much hope that there's like the younger generations are intentionally listening to music for the calming factor, especially in such a tumultuous, such quick pace and quick changing world. So the way that you described it is perfect. And I think we're really, I think this lo-fi movement, if we want to call it a movement, I think it's still at such an infant stage. and there's still so much possibilities, and so there's so much potential. And so for yourself and for Clover to be able to recognize that and to move it in different ways. And my like I had my buddy Paws on, and he's a Wim Hof instructor, and so he's also a lo-fi producer, so he's trying to combine lo-fi and Wim Hof breathing techniques. I have another buddy who's Seth. He's a yoga instructor, and he's starting to teach to instruct his yoga courses with lo-fi as the soundtrack. And so I think there's so many potentials. And so tell us a little bit more about Clover. Like, what's the history of Clover as a label?
Well, it's a relatively new label. It was founded by Lo-Fi Luke. He's really knowledgeable. He's an amazing person. And I'm really grateful for the opportunities he's provided me, both as a computer science student and as a musician. So yeah, you should totally have him on the podcast one time.
Yeah, man.
He'd definitely be willing. But yeah, it was founded by him and his lifelong friend, Tranquil Teddy. And they kind of brought me on a few months after the inception to do more technical stuff and kind of do a little bit of A&R work, but also mm-hmm. mostly just focus on development and taking... as a label, we didn't want to just have, you know, like a playlist and a live stream and a Discord, and that's the entire label. We want to expand into different types of stuff, like we did with the lo-fi bear.io. And yeah, we think there's so much more potential in lo-fi than just being like study music or you know, just on Spotify and YouTube. There's a lot of listeners out there that we want to reach. And that's kind of our philosophy as the label. As far as our music goes, it's kind of like just regular lo-fi, but with a twist. We kind of emphasize more melodic stuff, and not necessarily jazzy, but like unique and mm-hmm. good melodies and good instrumentation, and that's our focus. Yeah.
Man, well, that's awesome. And how did you and Lo-Fi Luke connect? Like, how'd you score the job as being the programmer?
Well, initially I was introduced by one of my friends who I collaborated with, and he introduced me to Clover and Lo-Fi Luke, and initially, I sent them some demos because I wanted to release with the label. It was my first release with a record label as opposed to just releasing independently. Mm-hmm. So I was trying really hard to send them good demos. And I was just sending really generic stuff because I wanted to fit the like archetypal lo-fi vibe. And he rejected my first couple of songs because they were just too generic and repetitive. But then I sent him like a really jazzy, like classic rock inspired guitar track, and he really loved it. So we got to collaborating, and eventually he asked me if I wanted to join the label because I had done some stuff with like web development before, and the label was looking for that. So yeah, it was really
fantastic,
awesome.
Fantastic, man. Well, and I love rejection is such an important important parts of developing as an artist and a musician, and as much as it sucks in the moment, those moments of rejection are so important to getting better, man. So I love that you were able to get over that. And I see a lot of people that become resentful after rejection, and you just have to work harder. And speaking of that, man, so you're making music, you're helping Clover with programming and developments and coming up with these new ideas. You're going to school. How are you balancing life? What do you do on a daily basis to try and balance all of these different aspects of your life?
Well, I think mostly it's just like getting into a routine, getting into the zone. because if with stuff like music and programming, I've acquired enough skill to be like, once I start like mixing a song or developing a website, I kind of get into the flow state and get in the zone and just, I don't even eat. I don't even talk to anyone for like 6 hours. I just mm-hmm. program or do music or whatever I'm doing. But as far as academics goes, you're always learning, like more so than music production and coding. You're learning new stuff constantly and you're kind of being forced to do it. So it's a whole different vibe. With academics, I can't get into like a flow state immediately. I have to like take intentional actions to try to do that. So what I've been doing recently is like when I wake up in the morning, I try to do like one productive task immediately after I wake up. It's not something that requires a lot of thought, but it's just like busy work. So I might do the dishes or do the laundry or whatever. And then once I do that, I'm kind of in the mindset of being productive. So I try to hash out whatever work I need to do after that academically and also.
Oh, George, there you are, man. Damn. Here, one sec. I had it marked where we were recording, so no big deal. And we're recording again. I think we're good. They're doing construction, so I have a feeling that somebody bumped the router. But we're all good because we were at 29:38, and we're going to start recording at 30 seconds. We're going to jump back into flow state. George, I apologize for the outage, but man, we are back without a hitch. We ended off just in regards to flow state and how that was different between programming and your creative pursuits and how that kind of differs with academics. And I guess before you go on, George, I love how much you're talking about flow state because it is such it's such an important tool that all of us have the capability to utilize and pursue. And I think there is an art in getting better at engaging in flow state. And I have a book. It's called The Art of Art of the Impossible. I can't remember the name of the author, but it's essentially an entire book on flow state. And I haven't read it yet, but I'm excited to jump in at some point. So George, before we were interrupted by the internet, keep telling us about flow state, man.
Yeah, it's definitely something that like you have to get better at kind of getting started. Because like once you start something, once you get in the zone, like you can like stay there for like 2 or 3 hours or as long as you need to get it finished. But it's really hard to find that motivation to start. So that's part of the reason why we made the website Lo-Fi Bear is to make it so that like you can just press a button and it won't immediately get you in the zone, but it'll get you started so that like you can get in the zone. And it's been really helpful for me. I know like before that, whenever I would try to do anything productive that's not like one of my main hobbies, I would get started and then immediately like stop and just get distracted by my phone or by talking to someone. Mm-hmm. And I remember once I was doing some technical challenges for coding interviews, for job interviews coming up, because programmers, we had to pass like some live coding tests. So I wanted to prepare for that. And I started doing some practice problems. And after doing like 2 practice problems, I was like, well, that took like an hour, you know, I'm probably done for the day. And the next day, like I pulled up the website, the Lo-Fi Bear instead, and I pressed start studying. And I went and did like 7 problems. So I completely doubled my productivity.
Yep.
I guess, I don't know. It's so hard to know like how productive you're actually being. Because, I don't know, our brains are kind of wired to focus on short-term rewards. So even if something is really beneficial to the long term, you know, we'll get distracted really easily and kind of stop focusing.
Yeah. Well, and you're, yeah, you explained that really well. And just like we talked about earlier in the episode, we're surrounded by so many distractions. And for me, I definitely like using structured time. So, and I just typically set a time block on my Google Calendar and just know that I'm working on this from X to X, but I am going to check out the Lo-Fi Bear and actually use that timer and see how much more beneficial that is. But even for my phone, I'll put it on airplane mode. I'll leave it in different rooms. I physically distance myself from my phone. So there's zero distractions. I remember my girlfriend got me a Garmin watch for trail running and for hiking. And it's a really nice watch. And the first time I wore it, I think I was on like a 18-mile like mountain run. And I was like 9 or 10 miles into the run. And then all of a sudden my watch vibrated and I looked at it and it had messages on it. And it felt so insulting. I was like, how am I being distracted right now in this moment? So, I think there's benefit in being defensive and beginning to guard your time. At least for me, I definitely have to come at it from a relatively aggressive mindset of, And I that works for me too, because I realize how important flow state is and how easily that can be snapped by a simple distraction. So I think it's a really beautiful thing that Clover and yourself are doing with Lo-Fi Bear, and I think that'll be extremely beneficial. And George, the other thing that I wanted to touch on was what you said about the importance of starting. And momentum is everything, and I've pulled that from a few of my favorite authors, both Stephen Pressfield and Seth Godin. And momentum is everything, but you can't even build momentum unless you have the courage to start and dive in. And I think with academics or even somebody in a full-time job, like, it's easy when you have a boss or you have a professor and you have an assignment due. But it becomes increasingly difficult when you become your own boss or your own professor and you're the one that has to hold yourself to that deadline. So I guess in regards to that self-responsibility or self-accountability, how do you manage that with music creation?
Well, I would say nowadays it's easy for me to find the motivation to get music done, because as I said before, it's one of my main hobbies. And also I'm collaborating with really amazing musicians and inspires me every day to get up and work on stuff. But mm-hmm. when you're getting started, I know that wasn't the case. I guess when I started out, I was just messing around. Basically, I was just trying to have fun with it as opposed to like actually getting something done. Mm-hmm. Yeah, my focus wasn't on actually like getting listeners or making any progress like that. It was just like messing around, and trying to create cool sounds and effects and downloading new VSTs and messing around with them and just experimenting. Cause I feel like if you can structure it so that like you're not doing something necessarily productive, it's more like you're having fun, then it makes like starting out really easy, a lot easier, because mm-hmm. there's no like pressure behind it. Like, I need to get something done. It's just like, you know, you're relaxing while doing it. So that's my main takeaway from it. Is just that when you change the focus, you change the way you do, the way you produce, so that you're not necessarily like trying to get stuff done every day. It's just like messing around. Then I think that's especially helpful when you're starting out.
I like that concept. And I was talking to, I was kind of explaining, this to my girlfriend. So I'm definitely a productivity nerd, and I try to jam pack as much as I can into every single day. And for me, something that I've almost set up this trick for myself, because I'm inherently a pretty rebellious person that enjoys breaking rules. And so sometimes, like once a week, there's a moment where I want to say fuck it, at least in some aspect of my life. But what I've tricked myself into doing, so I have my list of daily non-negotiables, in which, of course, music production is definitely on that list, but a lot of it's more administrative tasks and like meditation and finances and just more personal administrative work. And so I've tricked myself into on the days I don't feel like doing that, well, I might produce for like 8 or 10 hours. And I'll blow off the administrative tasks and just focus on producing and making music, which in my mind, I feel like I'm breaking the rules, and I'm like, I mean, I'm being rebellious, but in all reality, I'm even spending more time on truly what I should be doing most. So that's a little structure tip for myself, or structure technique for myself. So I love what you said about structuring, but I remember in college though too, between extracurricular activities, if you have a job during college, just sometimes the timing on classes or any clubs that you're a part of, like sometimes that schedule can be really, really hard to stick to just because it varies so much day to day.
Yeah, definitely. Like I know I'm at that age, I just turned 20, where like my sleep schedule just completely does not match, a normal person's sleep schedule. Sometimes I wake up at like 4 a.m. and then like the day after I'll wake up at like noon. So with that, it's like I still try to get stuff done. Like when I wake up, I'm trying my best to not necessarily stick to the same schedule, because you know it's different time every day, but stick to the same like format, mm-hmm. where I'll wake up and try to do something tedious and then get into the production and stuff like that. It's definitely difficult to juggle all that. And I know, especially with you, like you have what, like 4 projects going, and as well as the podcast and you know, networking and keeping up with people. So yeah, props to you. It's really inspiring being able to talk to you about that.
Well, thanks, man. It's taken me a long time to get to this point, and I'm still trying to get better every single day. And for some people, I guess it may seem over the top, but I'm not trying to be most people. Right. Yeah. I'm trying to accomplish a lot of great things before this lifetime is over. And for me, it comes down to being able to work hard every single day and to try and make that happen and to try and find that balance. And of course, I'm not inventing any of this. I'm just taking a ton of knowledge from what I learned in college, from the books that I continue to read, to educational podcasts that I consume, to guests on the podcast. I just try to take all of these different pieces of information and try to put those puzzle pieces into the puzzle of my life and continuously try to make it happen. But we're pursuing a crazy dream, man, trying to make music and trying to be a full-time musician. It's not easy, and I think the only the crazy people make it.
Yeah.
The people that are really, really good, and the only way to get really, really good is to work really hard, and or for the people that aren't necessarily as talented, which I kind of put myself in that group. I just try to work harder than anybody I know, which is kind of my goal. And so, George, speaking of that, man, so you're 20, you have a whole lifetime ahead of you, my friend. What are some of the biggest goals that you have? What are you trying to do with this life?
Well, I want to make enough from music where I know everyone says this, but like, I don't have to worry about like a day job. I can kind of just do that full time. And, but I also, I don't want to stop there. I want to also, I'm really big into entrepreneurship and especially with tech stuff. So yeah, a lot of my focus, for the future is not about like really like getting a job and kind of staying there. I want to do my own thing and, be able to define my own schedule and, you know, not have to worry about pressure of deadlines aside from what I set myself. Because it's so freeing when you get to that, well, I assume like right now, obviously, I'm not at that position, but like, I'd imagine that like, if you were able to go full time with music and also like pursue your own side projects, then it's like, you have so much more freedom to do what you actually want to do. So it's a lot more fulfilling. So that's, that's my main goal right now. And I know a lot of people, a lot of producers share that same goal. So it's really inspiring to be around those people and to inspire each other. So yeah, there's that. I want to get into, like, website development, as my main, as an additional source of income. And yeah, there's a lot of stuff I'm interested in. Right now, obviously I had to go the safe route and try to, I'm applying for jobs. I'm applying for internships right now. And I'm probably going to start out as a software developer, but, beyond that, I want to go and do my own thing once I'm in a position to do so.
Yeah. Well, and George, just based on this conversation and everything that you've told me, man, I if you keep working hard, you'll be able to make it happen. And that's the most beautiful aspect about the time that we're living in. Like, this is possible. This dream is possible. And yeah, it's a grind. But if you combine the entrepreneurship with your creativity, with your willingness to work hard, with your willingness to make friends, and to network, it's all possible, man. It's all possible. And I think the, especially within the lo-fi community, like in most other genres, you don't make money for a really long time. Where in lo-fi, you can at least start making a couple hundred bucks, a few hundred bucks a month, like relatively quickly if you work hard. And even that alone just shows that it's possible. And then it's okay, well, how do I continue to grow revenue and to continuously expand into other projects and see what's possible. And that's part of the entrepreneurship game as well. But if you're entrepreneurially inclined, like, oh my goodness, man, there's so many options. And being technically inclined and being interested in the tech world and the development world, like, oh, there's so many possibilities. And there's so many possibilities that are going to continue to pop up that we can't even anticipate right now. So George, I think you're in the right spot, man. And I think that's an inspiring spot to end this episode. Man, you got me hyped up. I wish I was as focused as you were when I was 20, because I think you have a head start, man. So that was inspiring to hear the goals.
Yeah, I appreciate the kind words. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, man. Yeah. And George, so if people want to get a hold of you or if they want to submit music to you for potential Clover releases, where should they go? And I'll include all of these links in the podcast episode description as well.
Well, if you want to submit music to Clover, you can do so via our Discord. We're working on without getting into too much details, kind of revolutionary submission system for playlists. But for now, all our submissions are via Discord. So, join our Discord. And if you want to contact me, you can just DM me on Instagram. I'm usually pretty active on there. So, yeah.
Perfect, man. Well, I'm gonna put those links in the description so people can just click on them and get to it. George, hey, thanks for taking time out of your day and for chatting with me, man. It was a pleasure, and I look forward to watching you grow, and I look forward to seeing what Clover's up to in this top secret sauce that you guys are working on, because I know it's gonna be something special, man.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you.
Of course. All right, peace out, everybody.